Word of mouth.
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 I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is a special fundraising archive edition of Word of Mouth from NHPR. While the cost and management of healthcare remains a hotly contested issue in America, not so long ago, people with aches and pains and other maladies had other issues to grapple with. Treatment. Back then, patients were treated with mercury and other poisons to induce sweating and vomiting, maybe a bloodletting to release the ill humors. Perhaps a phrenologist would examine your skull for irregularities. A mesmerist might quicken the magnetic flow of your brain. Or you'd be treated with an herbal tincture or some other snake oil-like brew. These pseudoscientific quackeries proliferated in the 19th century and inspired throngs of followers. Many were developed by people, including women, shunned by formal medicine. Erica Janik is author of Marketplace of the Marvelous, The Strange Origins of Modern Medicine. We spoke with her when the book came out last year. Erica Janik, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
You help describe the state of medicine in the 19th century, quite primitive, and little seemed to have changed since the 1700s. Give us a little bit of a background there, and this idea of heroic therapy that keeps coming up. What does that mean?
Yeah, so heroic sounds like it's, you know, going to cure everything like a hero will do. But heroic was the type of medicine that was very commonly practiced by mainstream doctors in the 19th century. And a lot of the treatments that they were using as part of these heroic treatments were things that had actually been used for centuries. They actually traced back to ancient Rome and Greece. And so the main forms of healing involved bleeding, blistering, causing you to vomit by giving you certain drugs and chemicals. The reason it was called heroic just referred to the large dose. It caused such an extreme or drastic reaction in the patient. And that's really what people kind of wanted out of medicine. It did change your symptoms. So if you had a fever and they bled you, your symptoms would change. They wouldn't necessarily cure your fever, but something would have happened. And that made people feel like their treatment was actually working, that they were getting better. And all of this was based on the idea of the four humors, which go all the way back to Galen in Rome. And it was really just about a body in balance. And they thought that if you had some kind of sickness, it just meant that something in your body was out of alignment. And so they needed to do some kind of intervention in order to get you back on track.
And heroic medicine was practiced by the doctors, I'm saying that in air quotes, of the age, because many of them were not trained as doctors. And this is opposed to irregular medicine, practices that were developed by people sort of on the margins. What are some of those?
You know, it's really a product of the time. There's all kinds of changes happening to American society with industrialization and urbanization, and there's lots of reform movements forming, you know, things like temperance and abolition. And so health is just a natural extension of all of these groups that are kind of coming together. And so some of the ideas that people had were hydropathy. They suggested the idea that cold water could cure basically everything. And the way that they applied treatment was through a variety of different soaking and bathing and drinking regimes. And it was actually pretty a tough thing. Like, treatment could last all day long, and people took it 7 days a week for weeks on end, just trying to flush all of this disease out of the body. There were other people like Samuel Thompson who thought that a lot of the chemicals that people were getting from their regular doctors, things like mercury, were, you know, very dangerous. And he suggested instead that people should be treating themselves with things from nature, plants and fungus and bark, because, you know, he said that everything we need to cure ourselves exists out in the world. And so he developed a whole system that was based on these natural remedies. And, you know, that's something that people are very fond of today. You know, you find all kinds of companies and things promoting natural products, natural ingredients. So he was really hitting on something, you know, 2 centuries ago.
Mm-hmm. And of course, people were easily seduced by the urge of a cure. As you point out, people were often ill in 19th century America.
That's right. I mean, if you were alive then, your life was basically filled with illness. You know, conditions were pretty unsanitary. We didn't really know a lot about health. You know, we didn't know about germs. We didn't understand how diseases were actually spread through human contact or through insects. And in America, you know, this is a very large country, and people were living pretty spread out. And so there weren't a lot of doctors to begin with. And then people often lived very far away from where they could actually get medical help. And so, you know, a lot of people were really suffering from diseases. And so they were desperate, desperate to get really any treatment, anything that would make them feel better.
And it also appeals to that American singularity, you know, that we can do this ourselves. One could cure themselves with hydrotherapy, for example.
That's right. You know, a lot of these doctors were really promoting the idea that, kind of seizing on that idea of American individualism. They really wanted to give people the tools to heal themselves, and Americans loved that.
This was a gap into which women walked in big numbers. Why did women flourish in the irregular medicine trade? Like women like Lydia Pinkham, who came up with these medicinal brews that, beginning with her neighbors, you know, flocking to her door in the 1870s as a cottage industry, eventually patented it and put it on the market.
Yeah, so women really find a place for themselves in irregular medicine because women's health was something that was not really addressed. A lot of women didn't actually go see doctors themselves because kind of social propriety of the time, it just wasn't seemly for a respectable woman to go see a male doctor and to be examined. And even if she did go see a male doctor, he often wouldn't actually examine her because he would be worried about offending her and he didn't want to touch her or look at her. And so not really much was known about women's health. And so a lot of women suffered in silence. And so irregular doctors and proprietors, people like Lydia Pinkham, really seized on an opportunity to help women out. Women needed doctors, and they needed people who were going to help them with their particular problems. And so Lydia Pinkham, for example, put together a remedy that was specifically geared towards women. She really advertised it as something to help women with their problems. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that I was most excited about as I was researching this, because, you know, I kind of went into this project thinking the story that I thought I knew, which was that, you know, doctors were beating back all of these quacks who were just selling people alcohol and drugs disguised as medicine. But the more I read about these irregular healers, I was realizing that a lot of the things that they were promoting, even if they took them to the wrong ends, were actually kind of right on. So one of the things that starts happening is you find irregular ideas as they're being challenged by regular doctors. That's also causing mainstream medicine to kind of look at itself and wonder, well, maybe we should check this out. You know, often it was an effort to disprove one of these ideas. If we think about phrenology, for example, you know, that really was a science that supposedly could read your character on the shape of your skull. They thought that the skull was actually an accurate cast of your brain beneath it, and so they could just feel for the bumps on your head and then tell you what kind of personality you had. You know, it's kind of a strange idea when you think about it now, but the idea, people had thought for centuries that your brain was really just kind of one organ, and there was a lot of disagreement, too, about where different bodily functions and emotions, where they were actually housed in the body. People weren't necessarily sure that the brain was really this command center of the body. They thought maybe some of this stuff came from the heart or maybe the liver. And so Gall, who founded phrenology, you know, his suggestion that the brain perhaps had different parts that governed different functions was really innovative and really controversial at the time. And actually, some of the advances that were then later made in brain science were an attempt to disprove him. And in their efforts to disprove that, they actually discovered that he had gotten some things right, even though the idea of actually feeling your head to see whether you know, are good at music or writing poetry is a little bit ridiculous.
Gall was one. Samuel Thompson, who you mentioned before, an itinerant healer and maker of botanic medicines. He was born here in New Hampshire, by the way, in 1769, as was Mary Baker Eddy, founder of the Christian Science Movement and Church. And I'd love you to talk a little bit about that idea that these irregular healers were able to command throngs of people, attract a lot of people to their ways of thinking. What was going on socially at that time to embrace these irregular treatments in such an emphatic way?
So in the 19th century, you know, there was just so many things that were really changing about American life. There were all kinds of technological advances. There was religious revivalism going on. You know, it was really just kind of a swirling time that was changing very fast. And there were all kinds of improvements being made in all different aspects of people's lives. But one of the areas that really wasn't seeing any improvement was medicine. And so that really opened it up to having all of these alternatives. And a lot of the people that became the big promoters of it, like Samuel Thompson and Mary Baker Eddy, were very good at telling a good story of explaining how their system actually worked, explaining how disease worked in the body and how their cure would actually fix it. And they were very tireless in their promotion. I mean, that's one of the things that irregular healers were very good at in the 19th century, is kind of seizing on some of the new technologies that were available, things like the penny press. It was much cheaper to print advertisements and print books than it had ever been before. And a lot of these irregular healers really seized on that and found ways to market their products. And so people, you know, we're reading about these things all of the time. And they were traveling around giving demonstrations of it. And so it was kind of only natural that some famous people in the 19th century would, you know, happen to be at a performance or see someone getting their head read and be curious about it. You know, Mark Twain must have tried every single remedy in the 19th century. And he wrote often very funny things about them. And, you know, he thought a lot of them were ridiculous. But at the same time, he kept going back and getting his head read by a phrenologist. You know, he went at least 3 times that we know of, and he could have gone even more. And so I think people were just really curious. And as I said, the 19th century is a time of great sickness, and people really want to be well. And so they're willing to try things. And these irregular healers offered remedies that were generally cheaper than going to see a mainstream doctor. And often they could do it themselves. And as we know, you know, Americans like to do things themselves, and they like a good deal. Mm. You know, Americans in the 19th century are not different than us. And so those things were just as attractive to them as they would be to us today.
Well, today, that tension exists in many circles with the regular healers and the irregular healers, what we would call today, you know, Western medicine and non-traditional medicines. But that is becoming more and more integrated at places like the Mayo Clinic, you know, where they do meditation, for example, in part of cancer treatment. What are some of the other examples of how these quote-unquote irregular medical therapies have integrated and become much more accepted by those who are trained as doctors?
Well, I think the rise of, you know, what is now called integrative or complementary health, which is really the bringing together of these regular and irregular therapies, would be rather shocking to people in the 19th century who kind of fought this bloodbath to kind of dominate health. But I think, you know, over time, as people started trying a lot of these methods, because these irregular therapies in the 19th century were very prevalent, lots of people tried them. And, you know, as we've already said, they got actually a few things right. You know, drinking water is a good idea. Exercising is a good idea. And as regular medicine kind of evolved over time, you know, they kind of absorbed some of these ideas from these irregular healers.
Erica Janik, radio producer and author, most recently of Marketplace of the Marvelous, The Strange Origins of Modern Medicine. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
For more on this and her other history books, as well as Wisconsin Life, which she produces and edits for Wisconsin Public Radio, go to our website, wordofmouthradio.org.